Hebrews 13:5 says, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." And this is one of the most precious and important promises for believers in the Bible. We'll see it exemplified today in the story. By way of review, over the past several weeks, we have been following the story of Joseph and his family. Joseph was Jacob's favorite son, and Jacob made no secret of that, giving him preferential treatment and the best of everything. Jacob's gross favoritism of Joseph, though, caused a deep resentment and hatred toward Joseph to grow in the hearts of his 10 older sons. That hatred finally led to a terrible end one day when the older brothers were out many miles from home tending the family flocks, and Jacob sent his son Joseph out to check on them. And when the brothers saw Joseph coming, they conspired together and sold him to some slave traders headed to Egypt. They then took Joseph's special coat, his coat of many colors, and they smeared blood all over it, and they showed it to their father Jacob, leading him to believe that Joseph had been killed by some wild beast. Jacob's heart was crushed with grief. Well, meanwhile, Joseph had been sold to a man named Potiphar in Egypt, the captain of Pharaoh's royal guard. And everything was going well for Joseph under Potiphar's house until Potiphar's wife demanded that he go to bed with her, and he refused. Insulted by the refusal, she then accused Joseph of attempting to rape her. And in response, his master Potiphar had him put in prison. But while in prison, Joseph met Pharaoh's cupbearer, also in the prison. And the cupbearer had a special dream one night, which Joseph was able to accurately interpret for him. It predicted that he would get his job back with Pharaoh, and indeed he did. The cupbearer agreed to bring Joseph's case before Pharaoh to try to get Joseph released from prison too, but once he was back comfortably in the palace, he forgot all about Joseph. Well, then 2 years later, Pharaoh had a couple of disturbing dreams of his own, which none of his experts were able to explain. Well, that jogged the cupbearer's memory, remembering Joseph, who had explained his dream for him. So the cupbearer told Pharaoh about Joseph, who was then immediately brought into Pharaoh's court. Joseph explained the meaning of Pharaoh's dreams, which predicted that there would be 7 abundant years of harvest, followed immediately by 7 years of severe drought and famine. Well, Pharaoh, recognizing the hand of God on Joseph's life, believed there wasn't another person more qualified to lead his country through this coming difficulty. So he made Joseph the second most powerful man in the kingdom, subject only to Pharaoh himself. To prepare Egypt for this coming famine, Joseph had all of the surplus grain stockpiled during those 7 years of abundant harvest. And then when the drought came, Egypt had sufficient food for its people. Well, back in Canaan now, Jacob and his people, they're running out of food. So Jacob, he sent his 10 oldest sons to Egypt to buy grain. As it turned out, Joseph, the brother that they had sold into slavery some 20 years earlier, was the very person that they had to deal with to purchase food in Egypt. They didn't recognize him, though, but he immediately recognized them. Well, rather than revealing his identity to them, Joseph took the opportunity to test them, to see what kind of men they had become, to see if they had changed at all. He told them that he suspected that they were spies, and to prove that they were innocent of that, they would have to bring their youngest brother Benjamin back to Egypt. Their brother Simeon would remain in prison as collateral to ensure that they would return. Well, Jacob's sons, they get back home to Jacob with the grain, and they're hoping to be able to take Benjamin back to Egypt with them to then rescue Simeon from prison. Jacob adamantly refused to let Benjamin go. He was not willing to risk losing Benjamin after having lost Joseph all those years ago. The famine continued, and Jacob's family was again running out of food, so Jacob wanted his sons to return to Egypt and purchase more grain. They reminded him that they weren't allowed to go back there and they wouldn't get any more grain unless they had their brother Benjamin with them. terrified of the possibility of losing Benjamin, Jacob had no choice but to let him go, since the family was on the verge of starvation. Well, when the brothers got back to Egypt, Joseph released Simeon from prison. He sold them the grain they needed, but he also devised another test to determine their character. Without them knowing it, he had his special cup hidden in Benjamin's sack. Shortly after they left to return to Canaan, Joseph ordered his own men to go after them, claiming that they had stolen his special cup. Joseph's men caught up to the brothers, and they searched through their belongings and found the cup in Benjamin's sack. Well, they were all taken into custody and brought back before Joseph. Joseph, he told them that he was a fair man. He would only enslave the one guilty of taking his cup, Benjamin. The rest of them were free to go. Judah pleaded with Joseph, though, to take him in place of his younger brother, Benjamin. He couldn't bear to face his father, Jacob, who would certainly die if he lost Benjamin, after having already lost his most precious son, Joseph, many years ago. Well, at that, Joseph, he could no longer keep his identity hidden from the brothers. He started to break down, and after some effort convincing them that he really was their brother who they had sold into slavery, they embraced and they wept together in this beautiful moment of reconciliation and reunion. Joseph, he encouraged them to not be distressed or angry with themselves about what they had done to him years ago, because it had all been part of the plan of the Lord to bring about a great deliverance, he said, saving their family from this terrible drought and to provide them a place to live and to thrive for generations to come in Egypt itself. Well, that brings us to today's story. We're in Genesis 45. You can flip over to Genesis 45, and we'll be picking up about midway through the chapter there. Well, when Pharaoh heard that Joseph had been reunited with his long-lost family, he extended an official invitation to them to come and live in Egypt. They would be given the best of the land to live in and the very best that Egypt had to offer. Pharaoh even provided carts and animals for them to carry their women and children and ample provisions for the journey there and back. Joseph, he gave gifts to each of his brothers, and he gave them gifts to take back to his father. And in verse 24, he said this to them. He says, "Then he sent his brothers away, and as they were leaving, he said to them, 'Don't quarrel on the way.'" Don't quarrel on the way. It appears that his brothers are still wanting to attach blame to each other for what happened to Joseph. Who was Joseph blaming? None of them. Instead, he chose to see this greater purpose of God that was being accomplished through it. In Genesis 45:5, Joseph said, "And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you." And then in verse 7, he said, "But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." Joseph is asking them to do the same thing as he's done. Don't blame each other. Forgive each other. Don't quarrel with each other about who's at fault for what. Focus on the good that the Lord has brought about through all of this. See, there comes a time when we need to stop putting blame on each other. Extend forgiveness and move on. Does it really matter who's to blame? Will it change what's happened? Life is not ideal. We're all sinful people. We all fail each other again and again. And rather than keeping score with each other, we need to extend love and grace and forgive. Think of Joseph and his brothers here. Do they need him to tear into them about the awful stuff that they did to him some 20 years ago? No. I mean, they're already racked with guilt about it, aren't they? They already hate themselves for what they've done. At this point, they need his encouragement and affirmation that he's leaving that awful stuff in the past and he's moving forward. He encourages them and he tells them he's put it in the past and he wants them to do the same. What's been done is done. Today's a new day. It's time to take hold of the good things that the Lord has provided for us now. Colossians 3:12, Paul wrote this. He said, "As God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." Verse 25. "So they went up out of Egypt and came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan. They told him, 'Joseph is still alive. In fact, he's ruler of all Egypt.' Jacob was stunned. He did not believe them." It says Jacob was stunned. The literal meaning of those Hebrew words there is Jacob's heart fainted. His heart stood still. It stopped. See, Jacob has spent the last 22 years of his life believing that Joseph is dead. He's continued to grieve heavily, not able to move past the loss of his dearest son. And now his other sons, they return from Egypt claiming that Joseph is alive. And not just alive, but a ruler in Egypt. I mean, what kind of sick joke is this that you're trying to pull on me, boys? Jacob has spent all these years trying to let go of his son Joseph. He can't allow himself to believe what they're saying. Verse 27. "But when they told him everything Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts Joseph had sent to carry him back, the spirit of their father Jacob revived, and Israel," or Jacob, remember Israel and Jacob are the same person, and those names are used interchangeably in our story here, "and Israel," or Jacob, "said, 'I'm convinced my son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die.'" Says the spirit of their father Jacob revived. The literal meaning of that is that his spirit came back to life. Jacob, he's been the walking dead for more than 20 years, languishing in his grief over the loss of Joseph. This is the first time any sign of life has been seen in him since that time. I mean, the news of Joseph being alive, it breathes life into this man. Back in Genesis 37, when Jacob was first told by the older brothers that Joseph supposedly had been killed, it says in Genesis 37:35, "All Jacob's sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. 'No,' he said, 'I will continue to mourn until I join my son Joseph in the grave.' And so his father wept for him." But now, in wonderful contrast to that, it says in verse 28, "My son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." Verse 1 of 46 is, "So Israel set out with all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac." So over the past 9 chapters of Genesis, 37 through 45, we have watched Jacob sink lower and lower in spirit. The loss of his son Joseph was a devastating blow for him. He slowly has ebbed away and given up on living. For the last 22 years, his grief has crushed him and it's robbed him of his will to live. But news of his son being alive, it's revived his spirit, it's renewed his strength. And now here in chapter 46, we see a man who has turned the corner and he's beginning to walk a life of faith again. We may not like to see our Bible characters act so frail and human-like, but that's what they are. They're human and they're frail, just like us. They experience discouragement and frustration and fear and depression. just like we do. We've said this before. The Lord is the hero of this book, not people. The Lord's the hero of this book. The amazing and reassuring truth that emerges is the faithfulness of God to his people. God is faithful even when we're faithless. In Jacob's case, the Lord never leaves him. The Lord never goes back on any of the promises he made to him. The Lord is always standing right beside Jacob with his ever-watchful eye trained upon him the entire time. And the same is true in our lives. God is always faithful. He will never leave you. His faithfulness to us isn't based on our ability to cope with life. Did you hear that? His faithfulness to you is not based on your ability to cope with life. Life can be overwhelming. An event in our life can devastate us. Like in the case of Jacob and the loss of his child. The incredible truth about the Lord is he will carry us when we're too weak and damaged to go on. He doesn't dump us for someone else with more faith and willpower. Ugh. I'm finding someone else to hang with. You can't deal. The Lord's been carrying Jacob for the last 22 years. He's been carrying Jacob. Jacob is just now again finding his legs. It says when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. We have a picture of a father here on his way to meet his son who he thought was dead. But he first pauses here to worship the God of his father at Beersheba. Abraham called on the name of the Lord in Beersheba in Genesis 21:33. Then at this same place, God appeared to Abraham's son, Isaac, Jacob's father, and he affirmed to him his promises. Isaac, it said, built an altar at Beersheba. That was in Genesis 26. Now, a generation later, Isaac's son, Jacob, is offering a sacrifice at this same site as an act of worship to the Lord before he goes to see his son, Joseph, in Egypt. We have a beautiful picture of the Lord and the men that he's chosen as his own, worshiping him through four generations. I love the picture we have of Jacob here, who's been so broken for so long, and now with this renewed faith and vision, returns to this special place to worship the Lord. This is his first significant act after receiving the news that his son Joseph is alive. He worships. He worships. Jacob has not forgotten who he owes all good things to. He's not forgotten the one who's made the great covenant promises to his grandfather Abraham and then to his father Isaac and then to himself. His gratitude toward God has been covered over by his grief for a very long time. But the cloud over his life has been lifted and he worships. It's a tremendous comfort to know that the Lord is with us for the long haul, through all of it, all of our struggles, all of the way to the end, until we're home with him in paradise. Verse 2. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night, and he said, "Jacob, Jacob." Here I am, he replied. "I am God, the God of your father," he said. "Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you. I will surely bring you back again, and Joseph's own hand will close your eyes." So as he's worshiping here at Beersheba, the Lord appears to Jacob and he speaks to him. And he says, "Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. for I will make you into a great nation there. He tells Jacob that even while living in the midst of this other nation of people, Egypt, the Lord will make Jacob's descendants into a great nation, as he's promised. He says, I'll go down to Egypt with you. He's promising that he'll be with him, even in Egypt. Jacob will not be alone. The Lord is going to be with him. He's not leaving him. I will surely bring you back again. So the Lord assures Jacob that his people are going to return to their own land of Canaan. Their stay in Egypt is not forever. It's temporary. The Lord has not revoked his promise to them concerning their own land. And finally, he says, and Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. This is one of the most comforting and tender things that the Lord could have said to Jacob in this moment. See, he tells him that his own son, Joseph, will be with him when he dies. After all that Jacob has suffered over the loss of his son, Joseph, believing that him to be dead for so long and the sorrow over that loss being so devastating to Jacob, now to have the Lord tell him that Joseph, his own son, will close his eyes. It must have caused Jacob's old heart to almost explode with joy and worship. The Lord is so good to Jacob. He's so gentle and tender with him. We see the Lord's personal, fatherly love displayed in this promise. He cares about Jacob, the person, the individual. Jacob, see, he's not simply the conduit through which the Lord will build the nation of Israel. The Lord is concerned about him as a person. And God's concerned about you too as a person. He deals with us personally, individually. He's concerned about the things that affect us personally, not just as part of the mass of humanity. You personally matter to the Lord. He loves you individually. Jesus said in Matthew 10:29, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Meaning, they're considered worthless monetarily. Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside your Father's care. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You're worth more than many sparrows. Verse 5, it says, then Jacob left Beersheba, and Israel's sons took their father Jacob and their children and their wives in the carts that Pharaoh had sent to transport him. So Jacob and all his offspring went to Egypt, taking with them their livestock and the possessions they had acquired in Canaan. Jacob brought with him to Egypt his sons and grandsons and his daughters and granddaughters, all his offspring. And then verses 8 through 25 list the various descendants of Jacob by name who made up this family of his at the time that they move to Egypt. Skip down to verse 26. It says, all those who went to Egypt with Jacob, those who were his direct descendants, not counting his sons' wives, numbered 66 persons. With the two sons who had been born to Jacob in Egypt, the members of Jacob's family which went to Egypt was 70 in all. So this relatively small band of people who moved to Egypt, lock, stock, and barrel to live, they're going to grow inside of Egypt into a group of some 2 million people by the time Moses leads them out of Egypt back to the land of Canaan in about 400 years. Verse 28. Now Jacob sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to get directions to Goshen. They didn't have Google Maps then. When they arrived in the region of Goshen, Joseph had his chariot made ready and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as Joseph appeared before him, he threw his arms around his father and wept for a long time. These two who loved each other so much, they're finally reunited after having lived so long believing they would never see each other again. He throws his arms around his father and wept for a long time. Finally, verse 30, Israel, or Jacob, said to Joseph, "Now I'm ready to die, since I have seen for myself that you are still alive." Now that he's seen with his own eyes that his son is still alive, he's ready to die. God is going to bless him, though, with 17 more years of life, which he gets to share with his son Joseph. And I think it's interesting to note that Jacob had 17 years with Joseph before he was taken from him. He was 17 years old when his older brother sold him into slavery. And that's when Jacob thought Joseph had been killed. He was 17 years old at the time. And now the Lord gives him 17 years with Joseph at the end of his life. Why? Just because the Lord's good that way to his people. In closing, we've seen in this story of Jacob how the Lord remains faithful to a man who was broken and crushed by life. The Lord didn't walk away from him in disgust because of his frailty. The Lord, with a father's gentle, strong hand, he brought Jacob through it. And he'll bring you through whatever it is you're facing too. Your brokenness and frailty and failure and shortcomings and all of the other stuff that's you will not deter your Heavenly Father from hanging on to you. Robert Capon wrote this: "God comes to us in the brokenness of our health, in the shipwreck of our family lives, in the loss of all possible peace of mind, even in the very thick of our sins. He saves us in our disasters, not from them. He emphatically does not promise to meet only the odd winner of the self-improvement lottery. He meets us all in our endless and inescapable losing. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you," he says to us.